You're listening to Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups. The major rule that we follow here is no bullshit on this podcast. No music to relax you, no advertisements of our sponsors. We only talk about fundraising here and nothing else. So let's jump into the episode. And today's guest speaker, we have Billy Libby, co-founder and CEO at Upper 90, a hybrid fund that has $485 million under management. And in this episode, we'll talk about how hybrid funds work, how are they different from normal funds, and why more founders should actually consider raising the mix of venture capital and venture debt rather than just venture capital. So Billy, let's kick it off by you giving us some background on yourself and on Upper 90.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having us. So I started my career in electronic trading, which is really the early days of fintech, where we would use technology to automate public market trading. And in 2003, when I graduated, I had no idea that venture capital and private equity and startups were even a possibility for people leaving school. So it's amazing how much the world's changed in a short period of time. But I think one of the benefits is that when I started Upper 90, I didn't grow up in the Silicon Valley, the more equity you raise, the more successful you are mentality. And so I was able to come into it with a different perspective. And when I looked at the industry with my partner, Jason Finger, Jason is an entrepreneur. He started Seamless and then Grubhub. And we just started talking about my world in finance and electronic trading and quant trading is so much about what's the most efficient price that we can make for a stock. Mm-hmm. And in the world Jason comes from, everybody raises money to grow with equity. And so it was just like these worlds are so different. You know, we had like a different price for every single stock at every minute of the day. And if you're growing a startup, it doesn't matter if it's for inventory or if it's to buy another business or if it's to spend money on a hire or to build technology, like you use the exact same dollar. And mm-hmm. So it just feels like there's a great opportunity to help founders like grow with less equity, like use equity for the riskiest parts of your business. And then Upper 90 can help you isolate the healthier parts of your business and finance those with credit. So it's not no equity, it's just less equity.
Nice. Very interesting approach. We'll definitely talk a little bit more about the separation of, you know, the healthy, the stable part of the business from the risky, the startup part of the business. And we'll talk about that a bit later on down the road. First, let's start off with a really simple and standard question that I ask pretty much every single investor that comes up on Fundraising Radio, which is, what do you like to invest in terms of field, stage, and what's the average check size that you usually write?
Sure. So for our hybrid model, we look for businesses that are a bit more capital intensive. Mm-hmm. And so those tend to be fintech, where there's some type of lending activity, or e-commerce, where there's some type of either customer acquisition cost or there's some type of like roll-up or acquisitions. So e-commerce and fintech tend to be our main areas of focus. The exciting thing about fintech is that just becomes almost part of every business. We can talk about that a little later. But, you know, every platform that has customers and data, we believe will start offering some form of fintech to their customers. So that lets Upper 90 kind of be a partner to a lot more companies versus fintech. People typically think of like Lending Club and, you know, just online giving, you know, payday loans. But I think it's a much broader category. But anyway, fintech and e-commerce. And within that, we really like to be an early capital provider. So we are usually get involved around the Series A. We usually write checks of about $15 to $20 million of debt and about, you know, $2 to $5 million of equity.
Nice. I love that breakdown. And let's talk just a little bit more about the structure of Upper 90. And first, let's talk about the hybrid model of it. So it means that you invest both in venture debt and venture equity. Can you tell us a little bit more about that separation? And let's probably start off with the discussion of how you separate the healthy, as you call it, part of the business from the, you know, riskier part of the business. How does that work? And how does the how does it work in terms of from the investor perspective?
Sure. So to identify something that's healthy, you need to see some proof points. So, you know, most companies raise a seed round, they prove the model, they get to product market fit, they're ready to scale. And like the next step in that journey is you raise a big Series A. And so what we hope to do and what we are doing, but we want to do it, you know, bigger, better, faster, like Tiger, but earlier, is before you raise your Series A and you're in fintech or e-commerce, come to check with Upper 90 and we'll sit down with you and we'll unpack your business and we'll look at if you're raising $10 or $20 million of equity, what are you using it for? And 9 times out of 10, we can identify at least a third to a half of that that we could finance with credit. So our slogan's almost been like delay your A. And if we can help, and I'll give you some tangible examples, if we can help founders achieve a few more milestones, like maybe they're in one city and they want to go to two cities, or they're on one platform and they want to go to two platforms, like achieving those things can have a material impact on the leverage you have raising equity. And they often just need more capital to do what they're already doing well. So I'll give you some examples of company comes to us and they say, what part of my business can I get capital from Upper 90 more efficiently? So there's a company called Clutch in Canada. They are building the Carvana of Canada. And so they're building an online marketplace where people can buy and sell used cars. A big part of Clutch's model is going and acquiring, you know, basically at wholesale collections of cars that they then will sell through their platform. So they need capital for usually 30 or 60 days to go and acquire all these cars at a massive discount. And then when they sell them through to their customers, they pay us back. So instead of them going and raising all this equity to basically warehouse the inventory of their cars for 30 to 60 days, Upper 90 gave them a debt facility for that specific purpose. And therefore, they could raise less equity for their tech build out and some of the stuff on the customer acquisition and sales side. To give another example, there's a company called Crusoe Energy, which is a leader in Bitcoin mining. And if I told you that there was a way to provide credit with downside protection to a crypto miner startup, you know, that sounds ludicrous, right? Like, crypto plus startup sounds like the riskiest thing on the planet. And so we sat down with the founder and we said, okay, let's kind of go through what your like largest expense items are. And for every new data center that he's building to mine Bitcoin, the biggest expense is the Caterpillar generator to power the data center, which has nothing to do with crypto. But because they're in crypto and because they're a startup, the traditional equipment financing companies will not lend to them. So we were able to create a project finance facility to isolate their ability to go and use our capital to acquire Caterpillar generators that can be repurposed, that allowed them to go and start 20 of these projects versus two. And then they were able to raise their next round of equity from Bain Founders Fund at a much higher multiple because they had accomplished so much more through our hybrid capital early on. So kind of every business has some part and it's all created through data. And I think there's a lot of ways to help founders. The challenge is most founders are kind of led to believe like, hey, raise equity and we'll go get you cheap debt. Well, the total cost of that capital is actually quite expensive.
Great. I love that strategy. 100%. No doubt in that. So one more question about the fund itself, and then we'll move on to talk a little more about the founder perspective for that. So on your website, I think it mentioned, or on your LinkedIn, I forgot where I saw it, but somewhere it said that you are backed by over 300 businesses. What does it mean for both you and the founder who is raising money from you?
So what's really interesting is there's two observations kind of being a newcomer into the space. One is as a fund manager, the more assets you raise, the more successful you are. And as a startup founder, the more equity you raise, the more successful you are. And what we found in the fund world is if we go and raise lots of institutional capital, it takes away your flexibility to solve problems for different types of founders and companies, because they want you to do one thing. Like, I only do equipment leasing, or I only do stock loan to founders against their shares, or I only do acquisition financing for Thrasio to buy stores on Amazon. And so we had a thesis where if we can go and attract the most interesting entrepreneurs that don't have a fund, that see the best deals that founders want on the cap table, and we can basically build a fund around them that helps give them the services to execute these deals and do these deals in larger size, we will have a sourcing advantage and we'll create an alignment with the companies that really doesn't exist. You could almost argue a lot of these big private equity firms have misalignment with founders, because if a company does well, they want to put as much money in as early as possible. Like, by keeping our funds smaller or just big enough, we can help solve a problem for a founder now, which has come through majority of the time through one of our LPs. And we are not goal seeking to try to put more and more capital in the future. Like, we're a great initial partner and we want to help get you to bank financing faster. So in that situation, Crusoe Energy, the founder, Chase Lockmiller, is an LP of Upper 90. And so all of our LPs, we built this flywheel, and I think it's hugely advantageous for us, but we've also purposely built it around these people and not around institutions, like most other funds have.
Very true. It's a weird tendency in the VC where, you know, any company that's performing well, every single VC just tries to put as much money as possible. They just do not care if the founder actually needs the money. So yes, absolutely love hearing that from you. So let's switch to the founder perspective at the end. Most of our listeners are founders. Let's talk about them. Should they do something to prepare for that pre-Series A where a fund like Upper 90 will kick in? Should they prepare some, I know, financial documents in advance? Should they like start doing something differently from what they're doing now in order to be more prepared to raise the venture debt round?
So I just don't like the word venture debt. You know, I guess, let me ask you, when you think of venture debt, what does that mean to you? Like, how would you describe it to a founder?
That's actually a very good question. I was not prepared for it. How would you describe venture debt as pretty much debt, like from a bank, but with slightly higher risk? I mean, again, as normal debt, it would be backed by some kind of asset like normal debt, I would say.
And so when I think of venture debt, it's usually if you raise equity, we will give you some debt because you have equity. They're almost underwriting the venture capital firm that invested versus the company itself.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
And so our view, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to apologize for myself that I had this idea of venture debt, because mostly I interviewed venture bankers specifically from Wells Fargo and stuff like that. So that's why I had this idea, but keep going. I like yours more.
And, you know, it's like, hey, if Andreessen Horowitz invests $10 million, we'll give you $2 million of venture debt as insurance. And, like, we believe that they'll keep investing. Mm-hmm. So our view is that, based on my background and our approach, like, we can isolate part of your business that we think has value regardless of equity. And if that asset continues to grow and perform, we can give you more credit without having to raise more equity. So the problem with venture debt is that to get more debt, you need to keep raising more equity. And it kind of is like this compounding problem for founders. And so when we get involved, we're able to usually do, you know, for every dollar of equity that a company raises, we're able to give them 5 or 10 times that amount in debt. Versus the traditional venture debt is like, if you raise a dollar of equity, you get 10% of that in debt. And so I just think it's kind of flipping the whole model on its head a little bit and giving credit for based on the performance of the business or the assets, not based on the equity raised. The biggest challenge is educating founders and, you know, once they've gotten to kind of that inflection point, say, hey, look, talk to Upper 90, see which part of my business can be, can get access to credit. Because once you start down the like traditional Silicon Valley path, I think the founders end up with a lot less ownership.
100%. I mean, that's the major issue with the Silicon Valley path. You just end up with 10 to 15% of your business, which is not very cool. So let's actually talk a little more about reaching out and talking to the upper 90. When should a founder reach out to you and ask like, hey, what part of my business can I go through with venture debt or with any other debt instruments that, you know, upper 90 might offer? Should be like on as soon as they raise their seed round, should be as early as pre-seed, maybe just to start the conversation, or should be just as before, you know, they think about raising Series A?
There's always exceptions. We love working. I mean, one of the best part of the job is working with smart people and learning, and we might know certain things, but each situation is different. So on average, I think where we can add the most value is when somebody's starting to think about raising their Series A, they should talk to us at that point in time before they raise their Series A.
Mm-hmm.
The other scenario is there's companies that might be a little later stage, like maybe between the Series A and the Series B, where they're growing really fast and doing really well. And maybe they just need another $5 or $10 million to kind of to get to profitability or to get to another major milestone. There was a company in our portfolio called Octane Lending, which is the leading point of sale system for power sports, like jet skis, ATVs, motorcycles, an amazing business. It's just raising a big round that will put them in kind of unicorn status. So about 2 years ago, they came to us in August of 2018. They were a Series B company. And he said, we are growing faster than we ever expected. We just closed our equity round in June. And we are basically, if we keep growing at this pace, we're going to either default on our bank line for the debt, for the financing, or we're going to have to raise more equity, or we'll have to slow down. And he said, if I can get to the spring, which is like a big power sports season, and basically get to profitability or near it, I'll raise it a quadruple of what I just raised my last equity round at. So we gave them in 24 hours a bridge loan for 4 months to get them from August to, you know, February, or, you know, 6 month loan to get them to April, and gave him the ability to then raise when he wanted to raise equity versus like when he needed to. So I think it's very situational. There was a company that ended up buying itself back from WeWork at a massive discount to what it had sold its business to WeWork. And we helped the founder finance that. So it's situational, but I think on average, it's kind of before the A, when they're growing and they want to push that out a little bit or raise a hybrid of equity and debt versus a, you know, a big equity round unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Right. So since most of our listeners are actually super early stage founders, pre-seed specifically, any advice to those people who are, you know, maybe looking to raise their very, very first check from outside investors, so not friends or family?
Sure. So we do invest in smaller sizes early. If it's in fintech or e-commerce, if anyone listening is thinking about rolling up YouTube channels, like people are rolling up Amazon stores, or people are thinking about, you know, buying Instagram accounts, like any one thing that's kind of in that like roll up world online, or someone's doing something creative in fintech, please talk to us early, because we can go earlier if we kind of really have deep understanding of the business. What I would just give as advice is work with partners that are the right partners for that stage of your growth. So if you're working with, you know, you're raising your seed round, work with like the best seed investors, like Red Sea Ventures and Box Group and FJ Labs, and, you know, not people that are just trying to put a small amount in to be able to just put a lot more in later. So work with people that are like there to support you at that stage, and it keeps optionality open for you.
100% great advice. Talk to people early. That's always the standard advice that I give. And Yes, it is very good and very much workable. So, one question that I kind of forgot to ask you is about the two different offices that Upper 90 has. So, you have an office both in New York and Los Angeles, two different coasts. Can you tell us a little more about the differences, specifically in terms of the investing, you know, from the investor perspective? What's the major difference on the West Coast and on the East Coast?
It's a great question. So that's kind of just by chance. So Jason Finger is in LA and I'm in New York, and I've actually since moved to Providence. So I think COVID kind of changes everything. But what I would say is we set Upper 90 up to help founders solve their complicated growth needs. And so Constantine, if you came out to one of our, we do these great quarterly Upper 90 dinners with like all of our LPs and a lot of our founders. And in LA, you know, we just have a lot of really interesting entrepreneurs. Like there's a lot more diversity of what people are working on. And when we talk about like what we're doing on this podcast, some of the structures and some of the ways that we've helped startups, then other people in the room are like, wow, like I'm in the music industry. And there's a way for me to use you, or I'm in. And so I think it's just getting people from different industries. And I think that's really great about LA. In New York, we have to work harder because most people are in finance. And the mentality is like, I have money, come to me with your idea. Money's the most important thing. And like the reality is like money's become a commodity. And so I think that we work hard to try to keep our LP base more tech versus finance focused, and we try to make the New York events more balanced. And but I think in New York there is that like finance first mentality, and I think that that's changing.
Absolutely. So let's talk about fundraising from the founder perspective. Again, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York. I would say, okay, not three major tech hubs, but among the major tech hubs in the United States, where do you think is the best place for people to raise money for their company? I mean, post-COVID specifically, since everyone is going slowly back to the offices, do you think people should actually move to one of these cities, or maybe, you know, Austin or any other tech hub that they might like? Or do you think it will be still acceptable to stay at home and just to chat with investors over Zoom even once the COVID is over?
Sure. So I feel strongly that you're going to need as a company to have a hybrid model. And for us, that might be 2 days a week, people are in the office. If there's a cluster, like, you know, in Austin or New York, like there's kind of a home base for an office. Like our team in LA will go in twice a week, and our team in New York will go in twice a week. And once a month, the entire team will meet in New York for a day or once a quarter. So I think you have to have some personal connectivity. And so for people that's traveling to a city, I don't think you have to live in New York, but I think there is a personal connection, and there's an element of being humans that Zoom is unbelievably resourceful, but I think there's a void, and you have to acknowledge that you have to fill it. Like we're never going to go back to 5 days in office, and but I think there's some middle ground that we have to be honest about is important. So I would say New York to me is there's just a lot of action there. There's an intensity. It's transactional. There's a lot of capital. So, you know, I think that being young, there's no place like being in New York. I think a lot of our LPs have moved to Austin and Miami. And I think that energy of New York is coming to those cities. And so I would say one of those three places to me would be kind of like if I'm a founder, I'd be thinking about those three places. But I think COVID allows you to be much more resourceful and distributed. We're actually, a lot of our LPs and companies are now in Austin. And so on June 29th and 30th, Jason and I are going to Austin, and we're going to have like a dinner with our LPs. We're going to have four or five of our companies present. So anyone listening that's in Austin and would like to kind of hear some of the companies we back and meet some great LPs that might be good for fundraising, let me know. And we'd love to kind of make you part of our community because I think that just helps everybody.
Absolutely, 100% agreed. And yeah, there is a lot of hybrid models in Upper 90, both the financial model and the working model as well. Love it. And on this positive note, let's move on to the very last question of today's episode. So, it's a call to action, Billy. Really, what do you want the listener to do as soon as the episode is over?
I think that they should do two things. One is, how much equity do I think I need to run my business and get to like the next stage with some comfort, versus a VC coming to you and saying, I can only invest if I own 20% of your business. Like, just kind of think about what you need and give you a little bit of cushion. You know, I'm not saying like live on the edge, but what do you need to really get to that next milestone, and versus reacting to somebody saying, hey, I've raised way too much money for my fund and now I need to put a minimum in to do it. It's not my problem. Like, yeah. So that would be one. And, you know, I would just try to, you know, reach out to people like me or other people and understand like what are different ways to grow your business. Like, ClearBank really has figured out a way to help founders grow. They're a portfolio company of Upper 90. We were their first institutional capital partner. And they're helping founders be more efficient about marketing spend. And Bravo Capital is helping app developers be more efficient about how they can get access to capital. So I think there's a lot of like tools or businesses online that can help you with a specific piece of your business. And so I think getting educated on what's available might surprise you in terms of what you can get access to early in your life cycle, which just lets you like grow without sacrificing dilution or control.
Absolutely. Great call to action. And yes, I'll make sure to leave some content this episode. So that is going to be my call to action. Check out the description of the episode. There is going to be Billy's LinkedIn. There is going to be a link to Upper 90. There will be also a link to ClearBank and Bravo. I forgot the second part of it. Bravo Bank?
Bravo Capital.
Bravo Capital. Close enough. Close enough. Yeah. So there will be a bunch of information in the description of this episode. And if you're interested in any kind of fundraising besides just, you know, standard venture equity,
one other thing that my partner Jason loves to talk about is estate planning. So a lot of founders, when they're setting up their business, there's a lot of efficient ways to set it up where you can get like a lot more QSBS treatment and you can be tax efficient. So again, like, we help founders think about how to not just grow but set up things where they own more after tax. And a lot of founders probably don't even think about this. So just a lot of those things that you, the earlier you think about them, the better off you'll be.
100% very true. And probably, you know, now I'm considering interviewing your partner as well. So people, definitely look out for other episodes on Fundraising Radio. Most likely, chances are there is going to be another partner of Upper 90 talking about estate planning to qualify for that very neat QSBS, which is or can be super helpful down the road. All right, that's going to be it. Check out the description of the episode. And as usually, have a good day.